Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It all started with two federal agents who heard a rumor.
She mentions, well, there is this alleged murder to have taken place.
There was just one problem. They had no clue who the victim was.
We have to do our job, and we have to find out, who did they kill?
It had been 15 years since this alleged murder. Was it still possible to unearth the truth?
I used to watch the Unsolved Mystery shows, and I often thought about calling because I was like, this is not right. How can a person get killed and no one knows anything?
I'm Jake Halpern, and this is Deep Cover, The Nameless Man. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear the entire season right now, ad-free, subscribe to Pushkin Plus on our Apple Podcast show page or on pushkin.fm/plus.
Today we're featuring one of the most thrilling new groups in contemporary soul music, Gabriels. And lucky for us, they performed three songs, one of which is still unreleased, live for Broken Record. The recordings were done in Austin a few months ago while they were there opening for Harry Styles and playing Austin City Limits. Gabriels consists of three very distinct pillars of talent. Lead singer Jacob Lusk, who was raised in Compton singing gospel and went to high school with Kendrick Lamar. Keyboardist and producer Ryan Hope, who grew up a lover of dance music in his native UK, and Los Angeles native Ari Belusian, who serves as Gabriel's in-house composer and violinist. Gabriel's origin story is as unconventional as their diverse musical backgrounds. In 2016, Ryan Hope and Ari Belusian were hired to direct and score a commercial with a gospel choir. After hearing the choir director Jacob Lusk sing, a light went off for the both of them. Over the course of the next couple of years, the trio started to record and release songs independently until 2021 when their music caught fire online. Sir Elton John himself said their debut EP was one of the most seminal records he's heard in the last 10 years. On today's episode, Rick Rubin sits down with Gabriels to hear how they were able to create a working environment that allowed space for vulnerability and musical exploration. And Jacob Lusk tells a harrowing story about getting lost in the LA County jail system in an effort to clear his name so he could appear in the finale of American Idol. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Before we hear Rick's interview with Gabriels, let's listen to them perform their upcoming new single, Offering, recorded live at Arlen Studio in Austin, Texas.
Don't want your love and want no more. I want to sacrifice. I've shown and proved and I paid my dues. Won't let you get me twice. Mama ain't raised no fool, I know, yeah. kill a mockingbird right. My daddy taught me a thing or two. You better heed my advice.
Once again, that was Offering off Gabriel's debut album, Angels and Queens Part 2, recorded in one take at Arlen Studios in Austin, Texas. And now here's Rick Rubin with Jacob Lusk, Ryan Hope, and Ari Belusian.
First of all, why are you guys in Texas?
We opened for Harry Styles.
How was that? And how'd that come to pass?
Cha! I don't even know. Now, they say that he asked for us to open for him. So he has a lot of different people opening for him.
Yes.
So I was told that he asked for us to open for him. Mm-hmm. Like he was the one who made that happen. I don't know, mm-hmm. but it happened. Mm-hmm. And it was marvelous. He's actually a really nice guy.
Yes.
Like he's genuine.
Yes, he is.
I said, oh, this is why all them girls is going crazy.
Absolutely. Was that the first like really big gig?
That's, well, we did Glastonbury wasn't as big as that. It was 10,000.
It was outside. It's a little different. Yeah.
So yeah. We did Elton John earlier this year, but it wasn't like it was different.
Yeah, and how'd
Elton John happen?
He found our EP. I don't even know how he got it, but he found our EP and he asked us on his Apple Music show. And this was before labels and everything. This was we self-released. We put vinyl out, Ari and I, you know, we release our own records and soundtracks. Soundtracks, Some Kind of Heaven was out on our label, Appraiser, because we have a production company called Appraiser that we release vinyl through as well. It's just, It's a backyard operation, but it's a studio that Ari and I work through doing scoring and production, film production and stuff. And it's us and the people who we work with, you know. Yeah. It's like a boutique job, but the putting the vinyl out is very backyard operation. That's just something we dicks, we love to do. We're like, fuck it, put it out. We put out vinyl. And then Elton John somehow got hold of it and he brought us on his Apple Music show. And then he said really nice things. He called the EP the most seminal EP of the last 10 years.
Incredible. And he listens to everything. Yeah. So he knows. I'll tell you, he listens to everything.
It's crazy.
And he's got great taste.
Yeah.
So that's...
It was a big moment for us that really,
because
it kind of like put to have that happen where,
of course,
was, you know, from something we just released, because that was really the three of us just releasing our music,
like recorded
like
in the garage.
Backup recorded.
It never gets old when someone that do you think makes great things, like something you do, it never gets old. It's a great feeling.
Exactly. It's a great feeling. It was like, honestly, it was really just, I don't know, you know, the whole thing of like,
out of the blue,
getting it on the radio. It seems like everything's so moved away from that. It's more streaming. It's more like social media bullshit. When we signed our record deal, there wasn't one single photograph of the three of us in the same fucking room.
Amazing.
I think when we signed the deal, I remember them asking for a picture of us, and none of us had a photograph. We've known each other for years, living each other's house. None of us had a picture on our phones or anything.
So since the club show to playing with Harry Styles the other night, have you guys done loads of shows or a few shows?
We did
maybe like 30, 40?
30, 40.
Nah, not even, probably not that many.
And where would you have played?
Royal Albert Hall.
Well, we did one.
That doesn't count, though. That was an hour show at Royal Albert Hall.
I see.
It was for
Letters Live.
Oh, how was that?
We played one song. It was really cool.
Amazing.
It was incredible.
It was amazing.
Yeah. You know, I know about you guys tangentially because of Jamie, who does Letters Live.
Now, is that so? Amy Sullivan is a friend of mine. I think she works with Jamie, and she was telling me about your book.
Yeah.
Is that Jamie? Is that who you did the book with?
Yes, Canongate is the publisher who's publishing the book in the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in London doing book-related stuff.
Right.
And Jamie set up this lunch at a place called Coco's, which is a club.
Oh, we played there.
We played Coco.
In Camden.
And I believe it was the person from Coco's who said, you might want to check out this. I think you might like this.
Was it Nick? Blonde
I think
guy.
It was Nick.
Shout out, Nick.
I think
Shout
it was
out
Nick.
Nick from Coco.
Sorry.
Shout out Nick.
And that was just maybe 3 weeks ago.
Wow, that's crazy.
3 weeks ago. It's like, I feel like you might like this.
That's my guy.
And then I'm driving in the car and I put it on and he recommended what to start with. And it comes on. I'm thinking like, I think it's a mistake because this sounds like maybe this is an old record. You know, like this is something that came out in the 60s or 70s. Like this is an old record. And then I look at the date, 2021. It's like, is it a sample? It's like, what?
That's Ari playing the drums, Ari playing the keys.
I couldn't figure out what it was, but it also didn't sound retro. It just sounded like it was from another time.
Yes.
It didn't sound like it was trying to sound like another time. It just sounded like, what is this? And then it's like, I couldn't figure out what it was. That was the beginning of the experience.
That's so cool.
And then I sent that to my friend Justin, who...
Yeah, we met here, yeah.
Who does the podcast. I just said, what's up with these guys?
Wow.
And he's like, believe it or not, they're going to be in Texas when you're going to be there. It's like, okay.
Get the fuck out.
Meant to be.
Because I was trying to figure out, I was like, does he live here?
Meant to be.
I was like, honestly, because, you know, like, you've been a huge inspiration for us. Like, particularly for, like, Ari and I, you know, producers, it's kind of like this thing where we were like, whoa. We're doing this right now, but to hear how it came around is just crazy.
Just
it's so
casual
serendipitous.
Conversation.
Amazing.
And put it on, just like, I want to know more. And I didn't even know, is it a group?
Yeah.
I thought Gabriel's, maybe it's like brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a family. Yeah. I had no idea.
I love that.
I know.
We're family.
Yeah. I had no idea. Also, because it was harmony. It's like, oh, maybe it's like a family that sings together. That would make sense.
I do all the vocals.
Amazing. That's why it sounds so... That's why it sounds familiar,
like
because it's your voice.
Yeah.
But you know how when brothers and sisters sing together,
they have a tone.
It's like there's a blend that doesn't happen when it's just random people.
Yeah.
And I'm a little weird. I've done a lot of studio sessions, so I like trying to tweak my voice sometimes when I do the harmonies and stuff.
It's great.
It's weird, but
it's great.
Wow.
That's a crazy story. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I can't. Yeah, it's so wild.
We'd love to play some songs for you.
Yeah, play some songs. Let's play some songs.
For
That was Gabriels performing Taboo live. We'll be right back with more from their conversation with Rick Rubin after a break. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
I'm Ben Natifafri, host of the history show, The Last Archive, and I want to tell you about a new series we're running in our feed. It's called The Deadline. Six essays written and read by Jill Lepore, the New Yorker writer, American historian, and founding host of our show. These are incredible essays on everything from the history of cryogenics to the Silicon Valley gospel of disruption. And at the end of each essay, I interview Jill about her craft as a writer. You can listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of Rick Rubin and Gabriels.
So how did this project come to be?
I was in college and at UCLA. And
where are you from originally?
Los Angeles,
The
Valley.
Yeah.
And I kind of stopped doing music in college. I was like classically trained on the viola or whatever. So I was kind of playing in orchestras and stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I lost interest in like being a professional musician, whatever. So I was studying like linguistics and stuff. And then I just started getting into working on my friends, like short films and stuff like that. So I did one thing with someone who was an intern at the company Ryan was signed to as a commercial music video director.
I should say I still am signed there because they pay for my visa at the moment. So let's just get that.
But it was kind of like a string quartet church hymn kind of thing that was done to this kind of practical effects little film my friend had made. So then...
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I heard it and like that's kind of how I reached out to him because I was just out. It was my first week actually moving to LA. I'm from Sunderland in the northeast of England originally. And then via London, I got approached by Roman Coppola's company to move over. And I was directing a video for Pharrell and 2 Chainz, actually. Some music film is my background and all of our backgrounds, really. It was, as Ari says, with their researcher, actually, he was like putting together the treatment for the job. And I heard Ari's music because I loved it, really. That was 10 years ago now. And next thing I knew, I was in Ari's apartment and his apartment was tiny. It was 50% bed. And then he had 2 timpanis in there and didn't have the internet. And immediately was like, this is my guy. You know what I'm saying? I was like, anybody who's just shipped 2 timpanis from Detroit to take up 50% of your apartment, I'm down with. So anyway, we basically became really good friends and he hooked me up with a studio in North Hollywood. We were making music together for years for film, and we were making films together as well. And that's how we met Jacob, who came into a casting for a job that I was doing. And they were the fourth choir who came in. He was a choir director. And I basically just, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket science scientist.
So they have very guerrilla tactics.
Yes.
So they booked the choir. Auditions really stressed me out. My aunt was like, well, Jacob, can you take the church choir? And I was just like, yeah, I'm not really want to audition and do all that. Like, I don't want to go through that.
Yeah.
So she talked really bad about me. So I ended up doing it anyway. Like, who do you think you are? You think you're hot shit, huh? Fuck you. So I did it. And they
How many were in the choir?
15, maybe?
Yeah, 12 to 15. Big.
Maybe it's, yeah. And it was the church choir. So these are like the pastor was in the choir.
Wow, cool.
These are like normal, everyday working class. Like, they weren't like professional singers.
Yeah.
And so they booked them. I think they booked them because of the energy and the vibe. Mm-hmm. They could sing too, but mm-hmm. we're like a family church. Everyone was really mm-hmm. close.
Where's the church?
In Leimert Park, like Crenshaw area.
Oh, cool.
So they booked the choir and then they went to Ari's studio. I didn't go because I was like, I'm not going. Y'all can go. So that Sunday in true, Ryan is the kind of person, and Ari too, if they want to get it done, they're going to get it done.
But it was Ari's idea. He was
all Ari's idea.
I was just kind of like,
Ari's idea.
I was sort of involved in that. But it was Ari's idea, which was a pretty divine intervention idea.
Did you already know in your minds it's a group or no?
Not at all.
Yeah, I know this is a long story.
No,
I'm still not sure it is.
We didn't know it, yeah.
So they come to the church, and when I get out of church, they have set up a remote studio in the choir room. Now, at this point, they hadn't heard me sing, but I think the people in the choir were like, oh, Jacob is the guy who sings and does all this. We just do what he tells us to do.
No, we saw you sing in the church service.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Afterwards,
he tried to run away from us. Like, he literally just was like, you know, this was at the early stages.
And this wasn't even just trying to like be a group or anything. We were just trying to get the job
done.
It just became really clear at a certain point where Jacob was direct. He knew all the parts, you know, he could arrange the whole choir and he was leading everybody.
And the job was still a piece of music for a movie?
For a commercial.
For a commercial.
Like, that's kind of like how we started. Like, so it was like this thing where we ended up getting to really good friends in the process. And we were just sort of like meeting up at either Ari's place or my place out in the desert. And these guys would come out and stare. And we were honestly just making music, really feeling our way of how to make songs. And there was something where, like, I think I can speak on behalf of the three of us, that when we left these times, when we like would come together, hang out for a few minutes, I mean, these guys would stay at my house. And it was like all of a sudden, Jake was like, this guy's like, we're staying in his house? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and it was this crazy.
Yeah, Jacob to this day never really.
He never like, stays out anywhere. He's like, he's really private.
I don't like staying at people's houses. I have a little bit of
but
anxiety.
But he didn't let us know that at that time, did he? He was like, honestly, he was just coming out and out.
Something internally was like,
it's crazy, actually.
Just see this out.
Yeah.
And we just were making music for fun. And we would stay for like a week. And we would just...
Really slow process. Maybe very stay slow. For a week, maybe get like one or two song, like little ideas. And we were kind of seeing where we all met.
Was this happening in LA or was this happening
Palm
in...
Desert. In Palm Desert.
I was living in the desert at the time because I'd moved out there to write a film with somebody who came to live with me for a year. So these guys would come in week one.
So everybody lives in California now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm... Half of I live in LA, but I spend a lot of time in the UK.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. And I live up in Pinion Crest, up in the mountains. I just got a place out there. And then Ari's in Burbank.
Yeah.
And then as we started, when we did Loyalty, that was the first song we actually really finished, was for a Prada commercial that Ari and I were working on. And we did the song basically for the commercial. And then the song was just strong. And all these people were like hitting us up, just like, oh, have you got any more material? And we're like, yeah. And we had fuck all. You know what I mean?
We had
like
nothing.
How long ago was that?
2018.
Yeah.
2017.
Really?
Yeah. 2017.
And that was the first thing that felt like we were like, oh, we have this is a song, you know? And it was strange because we actually wrote it.
Was it the length of a whole song or was it just
no,
the length?
No, it 60 wasn't. Seconds.
60 yeah. seconds.
And then we were like, add an extra verse and a bridge.
It was
and
no
then
bridge,
bring it back and stuff like that.
And then we made it a complete song.
And then it ended up on Radio 1. In the UK,
crazy.
Like, and we had no, it was
before there were any other songs.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And what was funny was we wrote the lyrics based on what the little short film was about.
Yeah.
In a weird way, so it just gave immediate content to write about in this way,
which is very much the style of what we've developed. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like it started like it's like that, but really, like even we just did Taboo's our most recent song, right? Like that we wrote.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, that we literally wrote that third song we just played there. We wrote that like 8 weeks ago.
Incredible.
Oh yeah,
7 weeks ago.
But our writing vibe is it's very cinematic in that we and I've done some acting and some theater and stuff. we literally, in TV and film, whatever, but we literally sit ourselves in the room of whatever it is. What does it smell like? What does it feel like? And once we get that clear, the song's just like
the thing what's been flood. Like, the thing what's Understood. Been a real catalyst that we've been wrangling with is like, that's been the thing that we've done from get-go. I mean, I met Ari as like a composer, you know, he was composing films when I met him. And it's like this thing where the three of us have had this film thing, but we've kind of been through this process where that just, yeah, it's a technique for writing lyrics, but what's the point, right? It's kind of like something we've been developing of getting the heart into that from a personal angle is what we've been working on. And in order to do that, you kind of need to trust each other. And I think like the thing we've learned the most is like trust is the gatekeeper of the real thing. And you have to know each other for a long time when you're three different people from around the world of different stuff. And that's kind of when the magic really started coming in, when it was actually amazing. That rather than just writing film stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just us coming as very different people, disagreeing on things, you know, like how we live our lives, how we see the world. But we can agree to disagree and also where we kind of come in the center becomes what it is.
It's that like 50-50 teach and learn and thing for, you know, I've where it feels great. Yeah, likewise. It's like this thing where, you know, somebody once said to me once that that's the definition of joy, beauty, and happiness is when an energy field is in 50-50 balance with any other energy field. It's when the experience of joy, beauty, or happiness occurs. And that is like teaching and learning becoming the same thing, by the way. And like, that's what I really, truly believe, that like the songs that we have that are the good ones come out of that.
Yeah, beautiful. When did you start singing in church? How old were you?
So here's the thing. I really wasn't that good when I was younger.
Yeah.
If I could just be honest.
I'm ready for this deep dive.
Like, were you in the choir when you were young or no?
So I wasn't allowed to get into the choir until I was like 10 or 11, because you have to like be filled with the Holy Ghost and stuff. It's this whole thing. And then when I got in the choir, I was loud and I had all this stuff, but I didn't know what to do with it. And the church I grew up in, the pastor's sons were kind of famous musicians. So we had like all these amazing singers and musicians and stuff. So there wasn't really space for this kid who's a mess. And not in a negative way. It just, I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
It's like you have a toolbox and you're just like throwing a hammer at a nail. It's like, what is he doing? And then I started singing in school. I mean, I kind of got recognized pretty quickly in school because once you like put me on the path, I can like fly.
Yeah.
So in school, they put you on the path. And when I got to my senior year of high school, I realized I wanted to do music, but it was kind of like not realistic. And so I was going to join the military. They offered me $100,000 to join. Sometimes I still regret it. Not going. So I moved out. I kind of moved out, like pretty much. My mom was like, if you ain't doing that, you ain't going to be in this house singing. So I went to college, not studying music. I took a voice class, and the lady was like, you were born to sing. So I was going to do classical music. That was my thought. Because that's a plan. I can go to school, I can get a degree. And even if I'm in the chorus at the Met, I'll make $75,000 a year. Like that's, I could do that.
You'll be a working singer.
Yes, I could do that. And then I started going to Craigslist and answering ads on Craigslist. But there was an ad for a hip hop artist looking for background singers for a Christmas project. So I went, I auditioned, I sang I Believe in You and Me, ended up being Nate Dogg. I don't know if you know who Nate Dogg is. So it was Nate Dogg.
And when was this?
This was 2006 or 7.
So a while ago.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, you've been doing it for a while.
Oh my God, yes. A long time.
Okay.
So I did that.
Yeah.
And then.
And was that a good experience?
It was a great experience. I dropped out of college.
Great. Great.
I dropped out of college. I was like, I'm going to be a singer.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. It was like Nate Dogg. And then I missed the train one night and I lived maybe a 3-hour train ride from the place. And I spent the night and we talked and I started writing with him. And that was like my, and he had a stroke and we didn't work for a while. And then I did Idol. And then that, you know, it was a beautiful experience.
Tell me about that. I know very little about that whole world.
It's great.
How do you get picked? How many people are there competing to even be on the show?
Maybe 125,000, I think, the year I did it.
A lot.
There's lots.
A lot. So how does it get down from 125,000 to you?
Well, I auditioned 4 times.
You should tell Rick how you got on the show.
Oh, yeah.
You should tell him that. this is a big part of, like, what I really admire about Jacob's dedication.
I auditioned 4 times.
Yes.
Twice the year I made it. They added LA last minute and I went by myself. I had just got a job. I was like, oh my God, I got a job. Fuck this American Idol bullshit. They're going to tell me no anyway. Well, the job hired too many people, so I had to wait a week to train. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, I didn't have any money. She gave me $15 for the bus. Mm-hmm. I didn't have my ID at the time. Like, I should not have been able to audition. I was able to audition. I made it through. And then I was like, hey, I have these tickets, you know, because you can, so you can't have an open ticket. So let's say today you ran a stop sign and you got a ticket. You can't be on American Idol. It has to be paid off and cleared. You can't have any pending court cases. So I had tons of them. I had ditching. I got a ticket for ditching school. I had tickets for not riding the train without my ticket, like hopping on the train. So I had warrants, all kind of stuff for like stupid
little things.
So I go there and I'm like, okay. Someone's like, hey, guys, I have these tickets. They're like, well, why don't you make it first? Because you probably ain't even going to make it.
Right.
So just chill out. But I let them know. I go through all the steps and I finally get to the celebrity judges and I make it. You're going to Hollywood. So then they send you to a private investigator. They ask you all these questions about your life. Yeah, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? Have you been here? Have you been there? Have you been here? And they say it's to protect yourself, but also to protect the show.
Yeah.
So if anything comes out, like they know what's going on.
Yep.
So go through all that. And then I was like, well, I have these tickets. They're like, okay, well, you have to have these tickets cleared up by Thanksgiving because Hollywood Week is in December and you can't come here with these tickets. And I was like, okay, I'm on it. So the next day, in the same clothes, I go to the courthouse and I go, hey, I have these tickets. I want to get them cleared up. They go, oh, okay, well, you can get a court date for January 5th. It'll take care of the warrants, but you'll... And I was like, no, that's not going to work because I can't wait till I need to see a judge right now. Well, there's no available time, so you can't. Kiss grits. Or you can pay for it. It's $5,000. Well, I ain't got $5,000.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even think to ask my grandma to ask for $5,000. So I'm not... To go on American Idol? Like, are you stupid? That's not going to work. So I said... It quickly cocked up an idea. I was like, leave it alone. Don't touch it. So I go next door. I go to the police station. And I say, hey, I'd like to turn myself in. I have warrants. I need to go to jail. I'm happy as a lark. And they're like, oh, well, no, we can't do that. I was like, well, yes, you can. I have warrants. Well, no, these are like these are train tickets, buddy. We're not going to take you to jail for train tickets and stuff. Like, we're not. Yeah. And I was like, no, I really need to go. Now, what's interesting is I was an explorer at this same police station the year before.
I don't know what an explorer is.
An explorer is like a little mini police officer.
Oh, cool.
So they like train people in the hood to get them comfortable with the police. And then they'll, you know, it's a feeding thing. You become a police officer.
I understand.
So I was ironically an explorer at the same police station. Yeah.
So you felt comfortable going there.
Yeah, I was like, take me to jail, bro. They would not take me to jail.
Yeah.
So I sat there for an entire hour.
Yeah.
2 hours goes by. I'm not going to say, can y'all please take me? I'll call my grandma. My grandma, I'm about to go to jail. She's like, no! And then my phone goes dead because I don't realize how serious jail is.
Yes.
Anyway, fast forward. So they finally take me to jail. So when they finally, after like hours and hours, I'm like, I am trying to do the right thing. Take me to jail. Wow. I really only want to go so that I can see a judge because I have to, and then I can get the tickets taken care of. So they finally pick me up. So I get in the car and he's like, okay, what is your deal, bro? Like, what is your problem? Like, you're good-looking guy, what the fuck is wrong with you? You trying to go to jail? Like, what's the problem? So I say, well, I auditioned for this show, and this is the only way I can see a judge. He was like, oh, okay, cool. So he's like, well, you shouldn't go to jail with those nice clothes on. Like, this is jail. So I was like, I'll stop by your mom's house and let you change clothes. I think he was trying to, like, now that I'm thinking about it, like, hopefully someone will come and help me and tell me don't go to jail, like, it's not a game.
Yes.
So I get to my mom's house. She left the door open for me. He goes, she left the door open for you? Why would she do that? And I was like, well, because my mom has think about giving me a key to her house. This is her house, like, and I don't live there.
Yeah.
So he goes in, gun drawn. The neighbors see him going in.
Wow.
Guns are drawn.
Yeah.
So he brings out my clothes. I change clothes. I go to jail. So I go to Linwood Jail. I'm sorry, this is a long story.
No, it's fine. Okay. I'm curious.
I go to Linwood Jail, do my mugshot. I'm like, I got to look fierce. Can't look too happy. Because I know that if I make it on the show and I do well, which is what I'm hoping will happen.
Yes.
This is going to come out.
Yeah.
So I do my face. I do my photo. So I go to the courthouse, right?
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this is like stupid ticket bullshit.
Yes, yes.
So it's going to get cleared. It's going to be done.
Of course.
So I go. And he's like, okay, great. All right, we'll just dismiss the tickets. You're fine, buddy. Don't worry about it. It's good. You've been in here. You've been to jail now a day. It's all taken care of. Well, that didn't happen. So after I see the judge, I go back, and it's getting later and later. I'm like, hey, guys, I'm supposed to go home. And they're like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, no, I'm really supposed to go home. Like, this is not, like, this is just, you know, because Linwood is like, I still have my clothes on. Yeah. Like, it was at my own little room. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. So now it's like 6 or 7 o'clock, and now they put me in shackles, and now I'm going to Twin Towers, which is not cute. Yeah. So now I'm in Twin Towers for 3 days. I get lost in the system.
Wow.
So it doesn't even show that I'm in jail. So nobody knows where I am. I can't get out. I don't, and I've never been to jail before. So I was like, well, I'll just sit here. The Lord will make a way. So after a couple days, I finally get out, like, and I run home in the rain. It was very, like, very much like a movie. I caught the train without a fare again. I got on the train and did not pay my fare again.
Yes.
It's the Purple Line. The police are never on the Purple Line.
Yeah.
And I run home in the rain, and then, you know, and then I do, and then I get to Hollywood Week. And it seems like every step there was like a thing where I should have been cut, but I wasn't. So I did Hollywood Week, and then I sang a song called God Bless the Child.
Beautiful.
Which I said was like the best ever audition on Idol. Then I did the show, and the show was beautiful. You become famous overnight, like yep. It's nuts. You're in magazines, and yep. You know, I placed fifth. The winner, Scotty McCreery, amazing. The thing, everyone was really great in my season. The judges were incredible. Like J-Lo taught me how to wear my in-ears. Like it was a beautiful experience. What they don't prepare you for is the social media craziness, because I had never had social media before. So yep. I was not, like, it was crazy. The comments people say, they say a lot of nice things, but say a lot of bad things. I wasn't ready for it.
No.
And then they don't prepare you for the fall after. Because yes. They make you feel like if you do the show and you do well, I did place fifth, that no matter what, and actually someone told me this, you'll have enough money to live on for the rest of your life. That was a lie.
Yes.
So I get off the show and you have nothing.
Yeah.
I had a couple deals here and there that were off and on, but it was a struggle, like being an artist. It was like starting over from scratch, even worse, because people want to touch you because you're on the show. Yep. You're on the show.
Yeah.
So I had some ups and downs and went through that and in and out, had a church gig here, had a church there. I had a management situation that ended kind of badly. They canceled all my gigs for the rest of the year and like dropped me.
Wow.
And took and kept the money.
Wow.
And so I was like, well, I'm gonna go get a job. And I worked for a sunglasses company called Gooder, and that helped kind of push me into this. Like, I had never been in an environment where I was, like, loved and told to be myself and be comfortable in who you are. And even in music, I had never really felt that way, because you got to think, I had my start writing. So when you're writing for the artist, you're writing in their style.
Yeah.
Right? And so I never had a space to really find what naturally just comes out of my body.
Yeah.
Right? Even in church, I'm doing a church thing. I never got to what naturally just comes out. But this has allowed me to really just whatever naturally comes out. And they've pushed me to do that. And it's been a safe place for me to do that.
Beautiful.
So it's just been absolutely life-changing. Between Gooder and these two white men, even though he's not white, he's technically Armenian-American. it's between Gooder and them, it's been in the last few years, I never, you know how you dream of a thing, but you're yes. like, I don't know if it's really going to happen, and yes. I don't know what I would have done.
Tell me more about your family.
I grew up in Compton. My father died when I was 12, really suddenly. My mom is from Georgia. My grandmother is from Georgia as well. They moved to LA when they were younger. When my mom was very little, my grandmother remarried. Her husband died in a car accident, and she had never worked. So my family experienced a lot of death and tragedy, like a lot of it. It's kind of nuts. My uncle committed suicide a few years ago. He jumped off a building, and it's been like, it's nuts. But there's this thing, I kind of interviewed my grandmother when we re-released the EP.
Yes.
And for her to experience all that, and she said she learned really young, there are no mountains too high to climb.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh my God, this little lady, this is what she thinks. And there's a little bit of me that kind of feels that way too. But anyway, I'm an only child, only grandchild on my mom's side. Mm-hmm. So I was very kind of sheltered. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in Compton. It's a little hood, you know what I'm saying? But my mother did everything that she could to make sure that I was able to experience other things and know that there was another way of life for me. Mm-hmm. Where she fucked up was she made me feel like I could be anything. Mm-hmm. And so I really believe that. Even sometimes when you don't, like you have those moments where you doubt it and you're like, nah, it's not going to happen. There's always this little bitty piece of me that's like looking at $10 million houses in Pasadena.
Yeah. But maybe this band wouldn't have happened if you didn't keep that thought alive. You know, it's impossible to know.
And I'll say this, the world and the music industry in particular has not been a place that I feel like harbored individuality.
Yeah,
it did not feel like and this is no, I'm not bashing anyone.
No.
I've had beautiful experiences. Yes, I've worked with some of the most amazing people in the industry. but it doesn't harbor people being themselves.
True.
It doesn't harbor people being comfortable in themselves. And then you even get people who are in the means ministry who really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, it's not a safe place for those people that's really their heart. And so with this experience, it's allowed me and pushed me to like, this is the most myself I've ever been.
Congratulations. It's just, how beautiful is that?
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
I'm going to tell you how old I am, man. I got. But it's for to now be at this place where I'm actually starting to look at myself and like be okay with myself.
Yes.
Like when I was younger and fine and had body, yada, 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 yada. Like, oh my God, what would have happened if I was able to embrace myself and yes. my voice and who I and really find my real voice then? Oh my God.
Yes.
It took this long. And my hope is that when people grab onto that, like when they see our shows, like, oh, well, shit, let me be myself too and find out what really makes me happy, what really makes me whole, whatever that is. Yes. Even if it's not, because some people, I think a lot of people doing shit they don't really want to fucking do.
Yes.
You want to fucking work that job.
Yes. Most.
Find what really makes you happy. I'm sorry, I'm going on a rant. And I'll say this.
Beautiful.
I am the most happy with these guys.
Yeah.
I am the most happy. When it's just us.
Yes.
These fucking white boys.
Yes.
Who are completely different than me.
Yes.
Who are like, oh, damn, these are my brothers. Like, these are my bros.
That's beautiful.
And it's been the best experience of my life. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I love it. It's beautiful. And now you hopefully you'll be in a position to turn other people on to that possibility.
Yes.
And maybe it's not just through the shows, but maybe there are other ways. And it'd be interesting for us to talk about that and figure out what that is, because I love the idea of spreading that message, because ultimately it's good for everybody. It's good for you to feel like yourself, but then we get to hear the music that's true coming from you because you feel like yourself. And if artists don't feel like they can be themselves, what do we get to listen to? What do we get to see? It all becomes the same. You know, it's all just everybody trying to be someone else, and none of it's interesting, and none of it's good, and nobody cares. The people making it don't care about it. The people scrolling through what they're going to choose don't choose it, because it's all the same, and it's all cookie cutter, and it doesn't matter. So the fact that you're having this experience, you're getting to work on something different that excites you, it's the best advertisement for more good things to come. And when I say more good things to come, I don't mean copying what you're doing. I mean people doing their own thing, whatever it is. Okay, I'm ranting with you.
Oh, don't worry, you're preaching to the converted.
Yeah, no, totally.
We feel exactly. They couldn't have said it. You pretty much just said exactly what goes on when we're halfway between ordering Chick-fil-A and watching a Britney documentary.
We have to take a quick break here, but we'll be back with more from Rick Rubin and Gabriels. As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
I'm Ben Natifafri, host of the history show, The Last Archive, and I want to tell you about a new series we're running in our feed. It's called The Deadline. 6 essays written and read by Jill Lepore, the New Yorker writer, American historian, and founding host of our show. These are incredible essays on everything from the history of cryogenics to the Silicon Valley gospel of disruption. And at the end of each essay, I interview Jill about her craft as a writer. You can listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baby girl is finally 19. Raised on catfish and collard green. Brown ash
way she put that thing on me, that hoe, and that made me lose control. Michael says she gon' break my heart and then take my soul. Angel, just like a choice. Somebody help me.
That was Gabriels performing their song Angels and Queens live for us at Arlen Studio in Austin, Texas. Here's the rest of their interview with Rick Rubin.
How did it go from the three of you to what we're experiencing you guys playing as a live band? How did that happen?
That happened, I guess, post-COVID, because we had, it kind of all came to a head a bit in, like, we had been working on it really sporadically. So that Loyalty song kind of came out, and then some labels, people who I had been working, I was in another band that was also signed to a label, and they started reaching out to us like, what's this? Like, you know, do you have more music, stuff like that? And then we were like, oh no. And then we just kind of got together back at my place and wrote a bunch of stuff, one of which is actually one of those songs we played here, which was, that was in 2019. Then we just started kind of putting it together. I have some friends, Ryan has some friends, Jacob has some friends that like play. So we had this little community of musicians that we would bring in. And then it was like COVID, actually our last session in the desert. We wrote another song called Stranger. And then we were like, we had one of our songs mastered, this one called In Loving Memory. And he was like, maybe let's put that out now because there's nothing going on, whatever. And then we could kind of put it into this EP. We had some songs at this point.
Yeah.
Then we put that song out and then it gained a lot of traction. You know, like Giles Peterson played it.
Amazing.
And Virgil Abloh played it on his radio show, which was amazing.
Crazy.
And we were just like...
In the same week, huh?
Yeah, it was in the same week. So then all of a sudden we were like, let's get together this vinyl, you know, and we put it together, put it out in December. And I remember just like, we put it on Bandcamp and just seeing like the Bandcamp notifications on my phone. It was kind of crazy. I was like, whoa, this is nuts. So it started getting picked up, you know, BBC, especially in the UK, they started really supporting it. And You know, it took a bit of time, you know, and there was a lot of talk, a lot of people coming in, you know, labels, managers, different people. And I guess around early 2021, we got like a DM from our manager now, Duncan Ellis. And we were big fans of Celeste, who he also managed. So in our eyes, we're like, maybe we could make a cool song with her, you know, something like that. We could, you know, I like what he's done, you know, and it seems like she's doing cool work. And we were all obviously, you know, trying to figure out how to make money and stuff like that. So it felt
broke.
Yeah, exactly. And then it was like, all right, it feels like a right time because we had kind of independently, we self-released that first EP, you know, me and Ryan and like Jacob, we invested all our own money into it. You know, we made, we did a, like a Calvin Klein campaign that had a bunch of our songs in it. And that was a really good marker for us because that was like this really high-end job. It was actually very artistic and it, we were just trying out these little ideas of new songs on it and then people were liking it. And it was very
people were
different.
Like asking for the songs on the Calvin Klein.
It was very
Instagram,
different from the temp music that they had. So we just like, they'd give us temp, but then we'd just give them a whole different song on it that was like completely different. Yeah. And then they would just go with it. And we were like, that's cool, you know? And so.
But does it start as a jam essentially? Like, is there a musical jam?
There's a musical piece really beforehand. There's a musical
idea. And is there a vocal idea or you'll hear an instrumental track and start singing just whatever comes? It's does it work?
So usually they've done a musical kind of idea of some sort.
It always starts as a song.
But including the melody?
No.
No.
Just
the music starts as a song that's written and developed.
I see.
Yeah. Now, like sometimes instrumental. In their music discovery, there may be a melody that they may pick up or whatever.
I see.
But we try to keep it as raw as possible.
I see.
And then when I come, then we, sometimes there might be a melody idea. Sometimes we'll have a conversation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we would have watched, like when we did Glory, we watched the Tina Turner doc. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of helps influence it. Or the music starts, but it's just the starting place.
Yep.
So the music changes, the melody changes, and it changes a few times in the process. Mm-hmm. But it's, for me, it's really allowing the song to speak.
Yes.
Like allowing it to say what it wants to say. Sometimes like Taboo, when we were writing it, and I wanted to add this. Like I just want to add this part where this musical break in is. It's like, you know, the song doesn't need that.
Doesn't make it better, yeah.
It doesn't need that. Why are you just going to shove this in there? And so it's really allowing the music, the song, the lyric, the story to have its way. The thing that I love is that we really do write the songs completely together. Like that's a real thing.
Yep.
But there's also a thing because of that, we don't allow our egos in the room when we're doing that. Because it's like, oh, I got to have my piece or I got to have mine. Or we don't have that issue because it's ours.
Yes.
And it really gives the song the space to do whatever it wants to do.
It's beautiful. It sounds like if you're doing that, even if you were doing that by yourself, there's not really room for ego because, do you know what I'm saying? If you want it to be its best version of itself, it's bigger than us, you know?
Yeah,
It's coming from a different place.
It's coming from a different... Okay, I'm going to be really churchy. So we got this thing called the Holy Ghost, right?
Yeah.
I'm very churchy.
Yes.
But I believe differently. I think love is for everyone. Yes. Even if we... Like, I think we're supposed to believe differently.
Yes.
Like, and that's fine. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think there is this other thing in the universe, maybe you call it the universe, maybe it's energy, maybe it's something that everything carries. And I think music carries that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just let it lead the way and let it have its way, it will. But oftentimes we get in the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like pretty much just the life, you know, like it's this thing where people just can't get out their own goddamn way, you know, and it's like, but it's, in terms of like how it starts usually with the music, like the starting process, usually Ariel have like written the music, he'll like get the structure of us. This is what I mean about what like I've learned from him and like he, with the Gabriel songs, he'll write the music of the verse, the chorus, the bridge, there'll be a structured thing that's very clearly like developed and laid out for that'll cut, and then he'll give me a call, I'll come in, we'll will tweak a little bit, but it's usually he's written it, done it. It's all really down the line. What my input in that is very minor compared to what Ari does. Mm-hmm. And then at a point when like we'll be like, all right, this is something that we can then bring to Jacob, because yeah. you just have to give him a lay up. I mean, you've heard he's like, he just needs a lay up.
And it'll sometimes be like, it'll be like we've worked through a bunch of tracks, you know, and we pick through what feels like it's going to serve completely and it's interesting. You
and then I imagine sometimes depending on what the vocal does, it happens again where it's like, oh, the vocal wants it to go in this direction.
Yeah,
exactly. We thought it was going to go this way and then change the music to go with the vocal.
And then we change it. Yeah. Rocco, you know, hey, can we try to do this or can we change the key or can we... But there has to be trust that, oh, he's really doing this for the sake of the song.
Yes.
But there's also a thing. Here's the other thing. And this is where being secure in yourself or like being okay. I had a job. They had their thing. This was literally just for the love of the music.
Yes. That's the key, though. Like doing it for the love of the music, that's why it's good. If it ever turns into a job, it won't be the same.
It's funny. It's ever since we did kind of get into, you know, a partnership, just being honest, it started, you know, we were like, you know, we're here, we're ourselves. And I'm like, you know, we all felt like this is going to be amazing.
Yes.
And then, you know, a lot of other forces, a lot of people come and start trying to tell you how this can be bigger and how this can be better. Yeah. And then to me and us, it felt like, I'm like, you know, I don't want to like look myself in the mirror and have a song I hate, even if I'm like rich as fuck. Like,
absolutely. They might not be right.
Exactly.
That's another part
usually
of it.
Usually they're wrong.
It's just another idea. It's another idea. And chances are what they're telling you is based on what worked for someone else, not what worked for you.
Exactly.
So it's impossible to know. It's impossible to know.
Yeah. And then you're just, and then what are you contributing? You're just, it's the same music made by the same people for the same audience. So then there's no new ideas.
Yeah. If you're making your favorite stuff together, that's the best chance you have of anyone else liking it. It's the best chance. Better than any second guessing that you can do or any opinions from someone who knows better. If you love it, if you collectively love it and would be excited to play it for your friends, there is no better test. That's it.
Absolutely. Because it was like when we were meeting up in these sporadic times and, you know, these two would be at mine or be in LA or whatever it was. Like in the weeks after we'd hung out and done something, no matter how raw it was, in the weeks afterwards, I'd be working some other shit and I'd be like, God, I'd just be listening to that drum loop.
Yeah.
I would. I'd be going back to that thing and I'd be like feeling that thing of like, oh, that makes me look in the mirror. That's what I'll do.
Yeah.
Or that's what I want to fucking do. Do you know what I mean? It was like, and then I'd be doing this other stuff that people might think is cool or makes money and whatever. And like, I fucking hate it. You know, I really did. And like, that's kind of, when I met Ari like 10 years ago, I was sick of people telling me my work looked great and I just felt nothing.
Yeah.
Honestly, when I looked at it, I was kind of like, I felt like I really didn't fit. It looked good and I'm good at what I do when I do, you know, kind of creatively, I'm pretty good at shape and stuff. And it's like this thing where I just didn't feel anything, man. And like meeting Ari, it was like this weird thing where I was working on stuff. This is before we started. It was like I would leave working with him and the work that had happened and the thing I took, and I'd feel like legit.
Yeah.
I would. And then like that would be the same feeling that would then carry on with the three of us. Like when we'd leave, I'd be like, damn, there's something in it. You know, that's just got something. It's got that thing.
And if you think of all of the people who make things trying to get on the radio and don't.
Exactly.
And you make something that's just your taste that you never think would get on the radio, and that gets on the radio, trust yourself. That's it. That's the test case. Remember that. Remember how it started.
Thanks, man.
We needed
that on record.
It's funny that you say that in my case, it wasn't even trust myself. It was trust them.
Yeah.
And trust the, I was like, Jacob, this is the best music you've ever done.
Yes.
Fuck it. Like literally, like, cause I'm like, well, no, I need to do this and I do this. And I'd be like, Jacob, just chill the fuck out. What they, y'all, that's what y'all want to do? All right, that's fine. You want me to do what? Okay, fine.
As a rule, try everything. If you have an idea that's different, try it also.
Yeah.
And we do.
Like, that's one thing we do rule like
try
that. Radio.
You never know. You never know.
That we do. I've tried some stuff.
But you can only.
Yeah, it doesn't always work. It's fine. No, it's fine.
We do that.
But that's key fun. Is trust. You know?
That process is fun. You know, it's like we love to just even recut, like take everything out here, just vocal and bass or something random. And it's like, that's exciting to us. That's where like we'll just, Jacob will just give us something amazing and then we can nerd out. You know, it's like.
Because that's the thing with Bloodline.
Stranger got completely reworked,
and I came back and I cried. I was like, "What the? It's fuck?
Like, but again, it's just you can't try everything if you have a fear of that's anything, true. Right? And trust is that's what I was trying to say. It's like the one thing I've learned, and the one thing I'll share here right now. If I was to give any advice to anybody in my short, very very short year long music career, I'm only talking like, who the fuck do I think I am? I've been making music. My first gig was a year ago, and I'm only eulogized about this right now. But I do feel it's important to share, just as an artist, just to share that trust is the one thing that will be the key to workflow. And you can, if you trust each other, if you trust I'm safe to try something, like you got to nurture that environment.
That's true.
Right? Absolutely.
Because if you're not nurturing that environment for people around you to feel safe, they've got to trust you to feel safe to try shit and be wrong. Yes. There's nothing wrong with being wrong.
Yes.
And like the thing is like that is what is, that's what kind of we've been building that garden, to be
honest.
And
I will say Ryan's been a very strong part in that for me and Jacob, I think. He's because... You know, I think Jacob and I have a sense to kind of be hard on ourselves in certain ways.
Because most geniuses do. It's a common trait they've got.
Ryan's always there to encourage, and even stuff that we might not think is something that we are just trying, he'll be like, no, keep that. That's sick. Like, really cool. And then you listen to it, and it's like, that has been invaluable in this experience for, you know, anyone. Because
So cool.
I also say this. In life in general, we need to create spaces where people are safe and they can cut the bullshit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us are doing bullshit that's not real, musically, in life.
Absolutely.
And we're making these standards and creating these stories for people. And people, you're 50, 60 years old and you still don't have a clue of who you really are, what you really want, what's really in your heart, what's really, you know, and so you've been bullshitting for 50 years.
Yeah.
Now you're 65.
Yeah.
And now you've realized, oh, I actually don't need all that. I really don't have to do all that. I really don't. But even musically, that's what I think we've created, where it's like, Jacob, we know the truth. You can't bullshit me in here. Jake, come on, really? That is what my prayer is, that the world is able to have that, where we can stop bullshitting each other.
Beautiful.
Whatever it is. This is what brings me peace. This is what, I don't want to fucking work a job or whatever it is. You
whatever
know what I'm saying?
It is. Yes.
Even if you have to do something that you're uncomfortable with, at least the truth is known.
Yes.
And it's acknowledged.
Yes.
Because then you're able to move. Sorry.
Absolutely. Beautiful. You never have to apologize to me. You never have to apologize.
I've been saying that one for 6 years.
I know, but I go on these rants and I get lost in space. It's beautiful. And I forget what my point is.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, amazing, man.
All good. Well, congratulations on...
Thank you, man. I got
congratulations on finding each other and congratulations on making beautiful stuff.
Thank you so really much.
Nothing better. Cool.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for doing this.
Man. Yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Gabriels. I also want to give a shout out to the folks who made that live session sound as beautiful as it does. The whole band, of course, plus Lisa Fletcher at Arlen Studios in Austin, Texas, Chris Shaw, who engineered that session, and Beach Noise, who mixed the songs. You can hear all of our favorite Gabriel songs on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, Eric Sandler, Jennifer Sanchez, our editor is Sophie Crane, our executive producer is Mia LaBelle. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm Ben Natifafri, host of the history show, The Last Archive, and I want to tell you about a new series we're running in our feed. It's called The Deadline. Six essays written and read by Jill Lepore, the New Yorker writer, American historian, and founding host of our show. These are incredible essays on everything from the history of cryogenics to the Silicon Valley gospel of disruption. And at the end of each essay, I interview Jill about her craft as a writer. You can listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.